This is a Power 98.7 podcast. Now we're talking. Subscribe to Power 98.7 podcasts in iTunes or wherever you get your podcasts. There's more on power987.co.za. Power Business, 6 to 8 p.m.
At 19:35 this Tuesday evening, of course, so we do enter into our Small Business Tuesday segment. And this evening, I'm joined by the founding CEO of I Think Shift, Busim Khumbuzipuwe, who, of course, is speaking to us about her life and her journey as an entrepreneur. Now, Busi has been an entrepreneur for a while. She's a social entrepreneur. She's a speaker. And she's been recognized by the likes of Forbes Africa for her work as an entrepreneur. She was 16 years old when she started her first business. And she joins us now to unpack this journey and all that it's been. Busi, good evening to you. Thank you so much for joining us.
Evening, Lothando. So grateful that I'm joining you for this conversation. Super, super excited for it.
Brilliant. Me too. Busi, let's talk about maybe you, where you're from, and when the entrepreneurship bug bites you.
Sure. Okay. So, I mean, I was born in Soweto, raised in Soweto. By my parents, Muzi and Betty Mkumbuzi. I'm the third daughter, so I'm a last born. But I had a very interesting experience as a child because they were 76 activists. You know, they were 15, 16, and they were involved as students in the anti-apartheid movement. And so growing up, I was really exposed to the stories, the history, the music, the culture around the, you know, the struggle. And I was really conscientized early on about my responsibility to not just my family, but to my community and, you know, the type of narrative I should seek to build for myself. So, you know, at that point, I think also just with the schools I went to, you know, I was very fortunate that I could leave Soweto and go to schools outside of the community. I went to Lanesia, which is an Indian community just outside of Soweto, for primary school. And then I went to Parktown for high school, you know, right here in Johannesburg. And so I had an opportunity to have a completely different experience than many of my friends. And I took it upon myself from an early age to really think about how I could bring those experiences back ekasi, that we could play volleyball or have pageants and, you know, put up stickers and have a fundraising drive by putting on a play and give back. And so it's these early initiatives, I think, that planted the seeds that have now, you know, manifested into an entrepreneurial journey. But certainly at the time, I had no idea that this is where my life would go.
And I mean, at 16, then you founded a company called V-Girls, you know, or you established a South African chapter of V-Girls, which is an anti-violence network for girls by girls. Speak to us about this work that you were doing, and even, I might even ask you, the audacity at 16 to take on such a task.
Yeah, I mean, that was, I guess, the crowning journey, the crowning moment in my teenage years. Because all along I'd been involved, you know, in the kind of initiatives I'd mentioned earlier, where we do fundraising in the community or be heavily involved in the church in the community. But I was also really interested in drama. So I used to act quite a bit. And once I was invited to audition for this play, V-Girls, the Secret Life of Girls Around the World. Mm-hmm. And this was an international play coming to South Africa. So I was thrilled. And, of course, I made it through to the final audition where I was going to perform in front of playwright and feminist Eve Ensler. And I do my performance, and at the end of it, she says to me, you know, I don't think you're an actress. I think you're a leader. Mm-hmm. And I am completely upset by this mm-hmm. because, to me, all I wanted to do was be on stage. Mm-hmm. But she, true to her word, she pulled me in as a mentee, and she took me everywhere that she went. She put me in meetings. She asked me to facilitate conversations on stage. She asked me to do a whole host of things that were well beyond my years at the time. And that's really how we then started the V-Girls chapter mm-hmm. in South Africa, which became, I suppose, the first organized chapter globally. Mm-hmm. And it was so successful that we were invited to a trip in New York when I was 17 to present this model to girls from Brazil and Israel and Kenya and inspire them to build similar movements where they would come together and build a manifesto for girls by girls that they would champion as well. And so it was certainly exciting and definitely my first experience as a social entrepreneur. Certainly, we were managing a budget of about $100,000, you know, and we were teenagers. So definitely life-changing.
And I suppose an experience like that does give you a certain level of confidence, Abusi. I'm keen to find out where that would take you and then maybe leading to the co-founding of Atsimo.
Yeah. So, I mean, years after then, I took a break from V-Girls when I went into university. I went to the University of Cape Town. And, you know, typical to, I guess, an achiever, you know, from Soweto, you know, there are three jobs. There's law, there's engineering, and there's accounting. And then I was one to go into the accounting track, although soon enough I realized, you know, maybe this is not for me. And I went off on a journey of self-discovery within that context, where I then took politics and economics. But as I was studying, it was against a backdrop of Roads Must Fall and Fees Must Fall, which we know were major student movements. I was involved at the University of Cape Town. And at the time I met, you know, my then, you know, later co-founders of Timon, who were at WITS, also involved in student politics and student activism. And we decided that we want to build a constructive platform for youth voices to be heard and to be centered. And so we started Timon. And at the time, we weren't really clear exactly how it would operate. But soon enough, we learned that this could be a viable, business. This could be a viable venture. And we organized ourselves, and we very quickly got on with raising money to run our initiatives. And soon enough, we were able to impact thousands of young people and lay the foundations for the work now.
And let's talk about where Timong is today. I'm very excited to hear that it is a company that is still, working with young people.
Yes, so it started in 2016, I think 2015 into 2016. At the time, we were 21. And we had managed from that point to today to work with the likes of APSA, the Nelson Mandela Foundation, Constitution Hill, and even international players like the National Basketball Players Association, which is a fund that represents the interests of black players in the NBA, the US. And through those, partner-funded projects, we were able to reach 9,000 young people in direct programs all over the country, mainly in quintile 1 to quintile 3 schools, which are your disadvantaged schools in rural communities, townships, and inner city. We were also able, through our media partnerships, to reach millions more. We would, you know, produce the debate segment on YoTV's Blue Couch, mm-hmm. a debate segment on SABC One's Daily Theta. You know, we had a stint where we did podcasting on the Cliff Central Network. And so we've had our fair share of wins during that time. But we've also, along the way, reoriented ourselves to say, What is Timong really about? And what it's about is the development of critical competencies that speak to, you know, how young people are prepared for the future. Mm-hmm. And with that in mind, we then created Timong ThinkShift, which is what we are mainly working on right now. That is the manifestation of all of the research and all of the years of experience we've had, really understanding how to develop and measure 21st century competencies.
Let's talk about then ThinkShift, of course, because, that's an interesting business. When we speak about measuring 21st century competencies, what does that mean?
So, you know, I make an analogy, Thando, that I'm going to make quickly, because I think it really helps people to understand, you know, on the spot. And this is an analogy we make to our students all the time. And I say to them, when's the last time you went to a McDonald's? And all of them, you know, will, you know, have been to a McDonald's recently. And I say to them, did you notice the kiosk, the self-service kiosk, where you could just make your order, swipe your card, and in an instant, you know, approach the front and receive your order? And they're all like, yeah, that was so cool. You know, I got to use my card and all of the excitement around that. And then I asked them, did that kiosk replace a job at McDonald's? What used to be there a few years ago? And suddenly it clicks for them that, oh my goodness, this used to be a cashier or teller. This used to be a job. And now it's technology. Mm-hmm. And this leads us into a conversation about what's currently happening, where you see the advent of technology in artificial intelligence, mechanization, in machine learning, autonomous control. And you see how this is completely transforming not only the labor markets, but society in general. And so we need to ask ourselves, how are we preparing young people for this new reality where even entry-level jobs that the majority of our young people rely on are no longer available to them because technology, you know, is cheaper, is more accessible, and is easier to use. And so these are things that young people talk about in a Timung context when they debate, when they voice their concerns. But through ThinkShift, we're then able to say, what are the fundamental sets of abilities that young people need in order to compete and to thrive in this changing market? And that's where we're able to identify skills like critical thinking, creativity, communication, collaboration, character competencies, digital literacy, you know, things that technology is not able to do, things that your ChatGPT is not able to answer you on. And how do we then create an education system that essentially builds those set of abilities such that the average young person sitting in Orange Farm, sitting in Tembisa, exits the schooling system not just with a matric statement, but with a competency statement that says, I am able to offer this to the economy, and that is immediately absorbed by the labor market.
Sounds like absolutely brilliant forward thinking there. And I'm very keen to hear about, you know, even the uptake of this of the work that you do at ThinkShift, Busi. And the reason I ask of that is because, of course, we know that the work is super, super, super relevant. But what we also find is that for many corners of society, we are still preparing people for traditional jobs. The ones you mentioned earlier of being an accountant and being a lawyer and being a doctor and so on.
Yeah, literally. And I mean, maybe there's not so much that's wrong with that because those jobs will continue to exist. But the question is, how will you function within that role? I mean, I give another analogy, especially to our teachers, because we do a lot of teacher training, because you're not going to introduce 21st century skills and competencies if teachers themselves are not equipped to be able to deliver that sort of training, right? And so in our teacher training, one of the things that I will point out is, you know, as an accounting student, and maybe people that have studied accounting remember that you would complete all these financial statements, right, in high school. And then you'd have that last question at the end for 2 marks where you'd have to critically analyze the statements and give advice to the owner of the company. And this was the problem because the moment I stepped into a University of Cape Town accounting classroom, that 2 marks became 90% of what we were doing. And so then the question is, well, you have a schooling system that is literally not preparing you to even function in that role, in that traditional role, in the first place. And so it's not always about the new jobs that are going to come up. It's also about the jobs that currently exist and how people will function in those jobs. And again, it takes us back to the fundamental set of abilities. If you're a young person, is able to think critically, is able to apply creativity, is able to communicate, collaborate, and demonstrate character competencies, then it doesn't matter how the traditional role adapts. They will be able to adapt with it because they are agile and they have the set of abilities that make them able to thrive within that uncertainty.
Very, very interesting. Abusi, I'm also keen to find out about funding such businesses because, of course, like I said, it's a beautiful business, and I'm super excited to learn more about it. But when you're an entrepreneur, you also have to convince backers to fund your idea. How has that journey been?
Yeah, I mean, it's a very interesting question. You know, especially, you know, because of just, you know, just thinking about my day to day. You know, we just facilitated a Department of Basic Education officials conference where we were, you know, training them and doing advocacy around 21st century skills to say to them, well, you know, this is the trend and how do you back us so we can create system-wide change? I think it's very difficult as a social entrepreneur because South Africa is very traditional business driven. You know, if you're selling a product like shoes or, you know, toothpaste, it's much easier to find your space within the South African market. If you're a social entrepreneur, you need to first ask yourself how you forge a path within that intersection between traditional business and the impact space. And that means understanding the space you play in deeply, understanding who the players are, and also leveraging as many opportunities as you can get in order to build depth within your model. And so the way that we do this is that we've got two units within ThinkShift. We've got educational technology, which is the technology around what I've just described, right? How do we measure 21st century skills? But we know that to adopt this kind of technology will take years, will take many, many players being involved. And for the majority of our children who cannot even afford stationery, it's going to also need sponsorship. And so we have an educational management service where we are contracted to various organizations to build and facilitate programs that are aligned to 21st century skills. And we use that in those proceeds to then redirect them into the building and adoption of the tech. So, yeah, like right now we're facilitating the UNICEF Coding and Robotics Pilot Program, which is introducing coding and robotics in public schools across the country. We know that this subject has been gazetted. The curriculum has been recently approved by Umalusi. But our teachers and sitting in Tembisa don't know anything about coding and robotics. And so we are facilitating that project. And, of course, you know, that's a purely business function. But, you know, the networks we're able to get from that, the income we're able to get from that is then able to help us build steam towards the technology and that element, which is more long-term and more systems impact.
I must also ask you, you know, about the ability, and I think it's a very fascinating thing that it sounds like you've done really well, you know, within Temong and also within ThinkShift, is the ability to keep adapting, you know, where you see a need and maybe you need to create models that are profitable so there's a clear cross-subsidization, that ability to be agile and creative. Abusi, let's talk about that process, you know, and maybe that is what makes entrepreneurship so wild, I think, and wild, I think, is the perfect word. That you would be trying, you know, to move the places that are survivalist in nature to one side while you try to create places of profitability and so on. Just speak to us about that.
Yeah, it's very interesting because I'm actually walking into studio on a question around agility and creativity.
let's take a quick spot so Musi can come into studio.
Power Business with Nolu Thando and Thonthi Mlambo, Monday to Thursday, 6 to 8 p.m. and Fridays, 6 to 7 p.m. on Power 98.7.
All right, it's 19:54 on Power Business, and in studio I'm joined by Abusi Mkhumbuzibuye, who is founder and CEO of ThinkShift and Temong. And of course, before we went to the break, she was in the car on her way here, and she is indeed in studio now. We were speaking about the issue of being agile, and agile you are, because I mean, how did you pull this off? But let's talk about it, you know, being able to adapt business models to ensure that you can enjoy cross-subsidization, you know, and you can also push a passion project or even projects that are basically coming to you before the market has even realized there's a need.
Yeah. So I think there's two core things here. And one is scarcity, which I think is a big driver of innovation if you embrace it. And then secondly, I think it's realizing that having a solution to a problem is actually a privilege that many people don't have. And so you need to get along with working on that. And I think a lot of our young people want to, you know, expect things to be done for them. I mean, me too, we're all guilty of this. But I think then, you know, scarcity becomes this amazing driver. I think of COVID, for example. I mean, coming all along, you know, towards 2019, people were always very impressed with what we do, but they always asked us, you know, why do you think this Tsemong project is helping these young people do better in school? Like, can you qualify that scientifically? Mm-hmm. And we were like, yeah, we'll do it. But the funding was coming in, so there wasn't a need to do it. Mm. COVID comes, Tsemong relies on direct programming. Guess what? They're all gone. And now we have to sit and confront ourselves for 2 years and what we're going to do with that. And what came out of that process is then sitting down and finally quantifying that scientific process. And it opened up a world of opportunities where we were able to realize that there are certain types of active learning activities where the young person is driving their own learning, where they are collaborating with their peers, where they're talking, where they're iterating and getting things wrong. And when young people are exposed to these kinds of activities, they develop these skills. Oh, here we go. You know, and then things shift came about. And so that scarcity was able to inspire, you know, that innovation and that ability to change how we move. But I also think of like my speaking career, and it's something that happened weirdly, but I've embraced it as an opportunity to also figure out how I embed myself into the work of the organizations that asked me to speak. Mm. And so many of them have ended up being clients or being supporters of the work that we do. And so it's really just opening your eyes every day and asking yourself how you will survive, and not taking any offense to that question, but really being excited to figure out what survival means for that particular season in your life.
I want to speak also, you've been an entrepreneur for basically your whole life. Yeah. It's a very, very interesting career that you've taken there. And I want to speak about building a life and a lifestyle and even a support structure that supports you as a young entrepreneur. Because I think a lot of the time, or also entrepreneurs might be shocked by just how much entrepreneurship takes.
Yeah.
But also we might not be good at building the right systems and structures around us to support
us. I think we're also uncomfortable with failure and we're not realistic about what that looks like. I think when, you know, maybe this is advice, I shouldn't start there. But people are always surprised to learn that, like, in a 9-year journey of entrepreneurship, probably 2019 was the first time that we turned a profit, for instance. And also profit doesn't mean that we bought luxury sedans. That it still didn't mean that. And there were many lessons on the road. Like, there was a time when we took out business overdrafts because, well, we needed them, but then we had to recover from that during COVID and figure out a debt recovery plan, and then we had to restructure, and then you have to navigate SARS. In South Africa, compliance is a serious risk, and it doesn't matter how old you are. If you're not compliant, you're going to get into trouble, right? And those are things that we've had to learn through that journey. And you try and balance that, of course, with coming from families and communities where you're an inspiration, and people are relentless about asserting that. And so people expect to see a certain lifestyle, you know, as soon as they hear that, you know, you made it to a Forbes list or you're on a magazine. And so, you know, you might be shy to show up with your polo, you know, and that can drive your decisions, and you can make the wrong decisions. So I think for us, what's really helped is, well, I'm in business with my husband, which is great because we can build our family and our lifestyle around our business aspirations. Our friend, our best friend, was also our business partner. And so even that immediate circle outside of our relationship also has people that are visionaries. If I think of right now, like our immediate circle of friends, we have, you know, we have the CEO of Kula, which is one of the biggest agri apps in South Africa, in Africa. You know, Dumim Pakanyani, who's leading internal democracy at Rise Mzansi. So it's all of these people who are headstrong in any case. And then family, I think one thing that's great about a family that didn't have much means is that they don't have a formula and they don't want to impose one. And so they've been very supportive. But it's very, very important to be realistic about the journey, or else you're going to be disappointed and you leave. You have to be realistic.
Well, we are unfortunately out of time, but I quickly want to actually make sure people can find you with ThinkShift, Simong, if they'd like to read a little bit more, understand a little bit more about the business. How can they do that?
So you can follow me on my social media accounts. I tend to be quite active and vulnerable. So I'm very open. I'm on LinkedIn as Busim Kumbuzi Powe. I'm on TikTok and Instagram as Busim Kumbuzi Powe. And you can also follow Simong at SimongZA on all social media accounts. You can also follow ThinkShift at ThinkShift South Africa on Instagram and on Facebook. Our new and reloaded website is coming out soon, and people who are tuned into our social media will be able to pick up on that. Yeah,
brilliant. Thank you so much for coming, and thank you for sharing your adventures with us so vulnerably.
Thank you so much.
Wonderful. That was Busi Kumbuzi Boya, who is a CEO and founding CEO of ThinkShift, as well as Simong.
You've been listening to a Power 98.7 podcast. For more podcasts, visit power987.co.za or subscribe wherever you get your podcasts.